In this episode, I'll share a mindset shift that you didn't know you needed. Hey there, it's Michael. Welcome to Whole Again, a show about helping survivors of physical injury and trauma reclaim their strength and resilience through the wisdom of Kintsugi. In this episode, you'll learn about amor fati, aka that mindset shift you didn't know you needed, as well as how the Stoics viewed emotions and a framework to help you get things done that was created by our guest. That's right, we have a guest on Whole Again this week. Her name is Becky Smoke, and she wrote the book that I gave to many of my clients, which is titled Choose the Handle That Holds, a guide to living, leading, and owning the moments that matter, which is music to my ears. You're gonna love Becky's energy and her take on Stoicism. From my perspective, Stoicism can get a little bro-y. Lacking emotion, too much of that stiff upper lip. Becky brings an energy and laughter to Stoicism. Like you and me, Becky has the grit of a survivor. And as the survivors we are, before we go any further, I want to say thank you for being here. Because I know some days, it's not easy to show up. So the fact that you're here says a lot. It means that you're still in the game, you're enduring, and you want to get better. So thank you for being here, and thank you for being a survivor. And we know in life, there's pain, there's discomfort, there's suffering. But life also has joy and happiness and laughter. It's all of it. And Becky's approach to Stoicism welcomes all of it. And you'll hear her vibe, her energy in our conversation. And I will say, our conversation is a bit salty, meaning there's some language, and some language that if I said it in front of my mom, I would have gotten my mouth washed out with soap and water. So this show is labeled explicit for a reason, because some moments that we experience as survivors just need a good old motherfucker to put an emphasis on what we're feeling. And with that, let's take a healthy breath in and a slow releasing breath out and get to know Becky Smoke. Hey, Becky.
Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. I'm being called sir. This is great. This is a great way to start. So
I call people sir.
Sir.
I've been doing that ever since I was in Paris.
So you're blaming the French on the sir
feature. On my politeness?
On your politeness. The French are very polite. So how do you feel about ma'am then? Is it ma'am, miss, ms? Do you have... What say you on that?
I have very few. If I do a ma'am, it's hard for me to do it without a Southern accent, which gets
ma'am.
Which gets awkward because I don't have one. But for me, I'll do like a miss. I don't usually do ma'am. I feel like it's hard to say ma'am without sounding a bit.
How do you feel when someone calls you ma'am?
I laugh usually.
You laugh.
I love,
like, oh, that's sweet. Bless your heart. Bless your heart, younger.
I get called Miss Becky a lot. Like
Miss Becky.
And by like my camp kids all the way through like NFL players that I've worked with. And that always makes me laugh too. Cause it just cracks me up. I feel like a kindergarten teacher. I don't mind it. So
well, Miss Becky. So for all the listeners out there, we are going to like blow the lid off of how people view Stoicism.
Yes.
So that's the goal in the next few minutes, is to blow people's minds through our conversation, because Stoicism, well, I think it's earned this label. It's basically some things that like bros do, you know, all stoic and all tough and suppressing their emotions and a little philosophy coming from the Greeks. And it's very bro-y, which I don't know, maybe current given the bro culture revitalization that's happening across the world. But we're going to try to do something a little bit different. So are you game, Miss Becky, to do that?
I am game. I think that right off the bat, I think we have to be clear on the difference of, like, you know, the big S stoicism, the philosophy of stoicism, and then also the word stoic, because they're two very different things.
And how so?
So you can be, like, to be stoic with, like, a little S, like, not stoic, you know, not being the philosophy stoic, does mean, you know, kind of that closed off, you know, stiff upper lip British.
We're going to blame the Brits. We blame the Brits for like their stoic approach to life, and we've just applauded the French for politeness.
Yeah, that's where we're going today on this one.
We're going to international controversy.
That's what's controversial these days. When people are not listening to this during the current time frame. So, yeah, so we think of Queen of England, which, like,
yes,
is hard now because she's no longer with us, but I think we can still think of her. No emotion.
We can still think of Liz as stoic.
Yes. Big as stoic, or the philosophy, is not anti-emotion at all. And the way I always explain it and say a lot is, I have emotions, but my emotions don't have me. And that's the difference. And, you know, to do the full international, like, my ancestors, my lineage would be Italian and Irish and Scottish. So, like, I have a lot of fucking emotions.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I do. Yes. It's just like, I can't help it. It's in my blood. And so, but to be able to be stoic, as in the philosophy, would be to check those emotions and, you know, and decide which ones you want to give your energy to.
I love it. What comes up for me when you just said that about you have emotions, but emotions don't run me, is that great Miley Cyrus, you know, she is a stoic philosopher. In her song, "We Run Things, Things Don't Run We," which is, great line by Miley for all the Miley fans out there. I'll send you the link to the song. It's an okay. It's not one of the best Miley songs, but that line is pretty good, right? So maybe she's a stoic in disguise, Miss Miley.
She might be, and hopefully, I think she'll definitely hear this podcast, and she'll write in and let you know.
She's a huge fan of Hole Again. There's no doubt about it. But she's listening. She's a binge type of listener, Miley is. So, all right. So how did you get into stoicism? Like, what was the pull into this philosophy?
So I do say this in my book. What a nice little plug right there. That was really good.
That was pretty slick.
That was slick. Well, I mean, I have, it's called, you know, like, I Hated Stoicism. It's the name of, I'm pretty sure, the chapter, Things I Should Know.
Yes.
But initially, when my husband introduced me to it, I was very against it. Like, I was the most immature butthead about it. And I tried to tear the philosophy apart because it was challenging. And it does force you to look in the mirror, and it forces you to do the hard things. It's not a hack. It's not a way, like, an easy out at all.
Yes.
And at the time, I was not wanting that. I did not want to look in the mirror.
You want
the
hack. You
want
the shortcut. Who doesn't?
Well, and mostly what I didn't want was to have to address the things that were in my control. And that's one thing that stoicism is really big, is understanding, you know, again, to the point of the emotions, like, which ones do you want to give energy to? Also, everything in life, like, what are you giving your energy to? And we spend most of our time and energy on the things that are not in our control instead of the things that are. And at the time, you know, I was still in the midst of, you know, my battle with my eating disorder with bulimia. And what was in my control would have been recovery to, you know, finally be done with that. That wasn't my control. It was in no one else's control. And I did not want to have to do that and admit that and spend my time on that. I'd rather spend it on all the things not in my control.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably most people. Like, we want to get all worried about all the things outside of our control. We can doom scroll our life away. And that's a way of like escapism and, you know, just denying what's like real, what's right in front of the mirror. So was this a thing your husband was like around the dinner table? Like you guys are just talking about, he's just throwing out quotes from Marcus Aurelius and Seneca and be like, hey, Becky, like I got a great quote for you today. And you're like, you know, talk to the hand type of thing.
No, he started by showing me like Ryan Holiday videos. He was like, let me show you these like YouTube videos, this guy Ryan Holiday. And I was not a fan of those. And it's funny that I was just nasty. I was just in that really, like, I was just being so, just trying to poke holes in it. I was determined to disprove the philosophy. And I spent a lot of time and energy on that. And so, which I think is ultimately a good thing, because yes, then I've like really tried to find all the dirt on it.
Well, that was, I would say that's probably the first indicator that you really wanted to buy into it. Because if you're going to go to all the work to disprove it, there's a little bit of you that's like, well, I don't know. I'm married to this guy. He seems to be, you know, we're going to keep him around. He's sharing this stuff with me. He might be speaking some truth to me. So I'm going to first try to disprove it, but secretively, you're probably like, there's probably something here.
You're giving me much too much credit. Like there was really, I did not want.
You didn't want
to? Like, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Like it was like, I was truly against it. And what shifted though was, I started, you know, kind of getting about it in a weird roundabout way. And I was doing some of my own writing and sharing stuff. And I had other people start to mention like, oh, this sounds like, you know, stoicism. And I was like, oh, God, no, yeah, that word
it's
again.
Coming.
And
it's coming
but
back.
Then realizing like, and so once I started getting these little like tidbits from other people, and that's how it often is. If you are married or in a committed relationship, you know how it rolls. Your spouse can tell you something and you can think it's the dumbest thing in the world. And yes, then someone else brings it up. And you're like, oh, really? That's fascinating.
Yeah. And then you bring it home and be like, I just heard about this fascinating concept, hon. They're like, yeah.
Have you ever heard of stoicism?
Have you ever heard of stoicism? This is fantastic. This is my new way of living. And, you know, your partner's looking at you like, hello. Like, yeah.
And my husband, to give his credit, has never once ever thrown them in my face or said like, I told you so or anything like that. I don't know why he hasn't. I would have done that immediately and multiple times. But he's been really good about that. And so it was when COVID hit and I really was faced with this moment of realizing so much is out of my control right now. And it was a scary time. I'm a type 1 diabetic. My daughter had undiagnosed like lung issues. We didn't know. My husband's he's a firefighter on two departments. So he's on shift 100 hours a week. And, you know, we had just so much uncertainty. And I knew that if I were to continue like down this path of bulimia and stuff, and it wouldn't end well. And then the only thing I had control over, you know, as far as my health goes, was recovery on that point, you know, to move on and pass that and get myself, you know, get my shit together, honestly, yeah, because like, I was like, I have to stay healthy. I cannot do this. And so that's when I really was willing, right, to look in the mirror, to do what stoicism asks of you. And that's what brought me back around. And so once I had these little kind of touch points of, okay, maybe it's not as horrible as I thought it was of a philosophy, not as like brutal. And then COVID hit and I was like, well, I better dive in. And I did.
So the pandemic was really like the big wake up call.
It was.
You know what? I do think it was a bit of a wake up call for the world, maybe for this country. I think the problem is some people have hit snooze and gone back to sleep. You know, it's just like, I don't want to wake up. You know, I want to sleep in. And I think that's also quite natural because it's still chaotic. If we looked out the window, it's still like nuts. Mm-hmm. So in your book, choose to handle the holds. I would say you serve up your husband very well. So you give him a lot of credit. So very, very cool job. I love the book.
Like, I start off in my book, like, I do idiotic things, but I'm not an idiot.
Yes.
Like,
I'm
a smart enough wife. I'm gonna give him credit.
You're giving him credit for you're giving credit for the introduction to Stoicism from the book. What do you hope people gain from it?
Practical shit.
Practical, yeah.
Here's why. Up until this point, Michael, I had like digested and read just about every book out there on self-help, growth, like Brene Brown, like every single, and I love her work. It's fantastic. She's great. I would read her stuff though, and I just afterwards be like, but how?
But how, like, are you going to actually do this
how
shit?
How do I do this? Like, and yes, like read it, and I would almost get, I started to get angry because I was like, I felt like I had all these tools in this toolbox, but I didn't have the key. Like, I couldn't access it. And I was just getting very frustrated. And I remember one day in therapy, like, asking my therapist, like, I'm like, isn't there just, like, a, like, I just want a pill. Like, I just want, like, something that will just, like, at, like, give me access. Like, what's the easy out? And he was like, there is no easy out.
Easy out. Like, it's like, all part of the process. You're on a journey.
Yeah. You know, like, so I'm like, I'm just your cash cow on this point. Like, you know, yes. I'm a lifer. You know, that was my kind of frustration with books. Great content. You're like, yes, yes, yes. And then you end it and it's just, I didn't know what to do with the stuff. And so with my book, that's why I literally have a chapter called But How at the end of each of the four pillars of my leadership framework, be, you know, full of these practical ways. Like, how do you implement it? Here's how.
Yeah, I want to get like into that. That I do appreciate that part of the book, or just that emphasis in the book, because you do, you know, you share great elements of Stoicism. You got your great quotes. Of course, I'm completely biased. I should be in full disclosure to those listening. There's a part of the book that's about me. So like, I'm totally a biased host here and reader. I was like, this book is fantastic, right? Especially that chapter about O'Brien. That was pretty good. So
it is pretty good. You know what, though? I have a bone to pick with you, because you had me put in the name of your podcast.
Oh, yes.
And then you changed the name of your podcast.
Yeah, I tend to do that, like to screw things up. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I do feel that was intentional.
Yeah, that was. It was malicious. I was like, I'm going to get this, Miss Becky. Yes.
That's what the reviews have said.
Yeah, that's what the reviews. They were like, this book, Miss Becky, is fantastic, except for the chapter about O'Brien and that switcheroo he did on his podcast name. So my apologies.
Yeah, no, so I do have, it is like, to your point, though, the book is full of stories.
Yes.
I love stories. I'm a story seeker, to the point where, yeah, my dear husband has seen this look in my eyes when something bad has happened, where there's like some kind of, and he'll just see this little like glean in my eyes, and he goes, this is a story for you, isn't it? He's like, you've already figured out the story. And I was like, you betcha this is a story. Like, I see everything as a story.
Everything is a, but the thing is, I'm right there with you. Everything is a story. Like, life is like absolutely fantastic, and we can come up with like 5 to 15 different stories every day.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them just stink, right?
Yeah.
But there are a few gems each day that we can weave of like a beautiful story on.
And that's where you get this, the concept, and now it's not technically a Stoic concept. So if there's any Stoic purists listening, I'm aware that amor fati does not come from the Stoics. However, it is a Stoic mindset, and as a Stoic, it's perfectly in line with it, but it comes from Nietzsche. Oh my God, what's the German pronunciation? I just listened to a whole debate on how do you actually pronounce his name.
So I'm not going to get into the debate, but like Nietzsche is sort of how I've heard it, but I could be
I just remember listening to one. Now it gets in my head every time.
So what is amor fati?
Amor fati. I know everyone listening is a Latin nerd, so they know this, but it's,
of course, we are big in the Latin nerd community here on Whole Again. It's one of our niches.
I start every talk with this concept, which is a real uplifter thing. Everyone's like, yay, Latin, This is what I came to hear. And I cover Latin, Stoicism, and death in just about every single talk I give. And so, like, man, is it a...
I tell you, there's nothing more motivating as you get up in front of the NFL teams that you work with, and they're all ready to go out on the battlefield. And, hey, guys, for a minute, we're going to talk about death.
Yeah,
and in Latin. Yeah, they in Latin. I tell you, nothing fires up the troops like a good Latin lesson. Nothing.
Really does.
It does. So, it goes viral on YouTube.
100% of the time. Amor fati means like a love of your fate. Love your fate. Amor fati. Fati being fate. Amor being love. All right. Or like the way I like to just like picture it is embracing your fate. And it's not just accepting it. So it's not just taking the hits, but getting stronger because of them. And it's this idea of taking everything that's thrown at you and turning it to your benefit. And it's not toxic positivity, right? It's not saying that everything's all rainbows and sunshine and, you know, you poop Skittles, right? Like, no. Like, it is recognizing, like, yeah, this is not what I wanted. Like, this might suck, but it's what I got. And sometimes it's realizing that, like, the way to turn to your benefit is to simply be appreciative of the fact that you're alive. You know, like, I'm usually tell people, like, it's this or you're dead. Like, which one do you want? And that's, you know, that's to the extreme. But sometimes, again, that's where you have to go. And it's, but we get really hung up, Michael, on the stuff that's not in our control when it comes to our fate, and spend all of our time there. And in doing so, we waste the opportunity to really live. And I think too many of us just pass time. We're not actually living life. And this whole idea, life is short, I kind of say bullshit. Life is long enough. We just aren't really spending it living.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Becky. I think this whole concept was a game changer for me and my recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the early phases of my recovery, I was, as I would say, arguing with reality. All the things outside of my control. Mm-hmm. My accident shouldn't have happened. The driver shouldn't have been driving. This totally sucks. Life is so unfair. I was playing by the rules. Yada, 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 right?
And
you know? And I didn't mention the lobster bisque for all the Seinfeld fans out there, for that reference. Until I didn't know about Stoicism at the time, but I did know about acceptance of, hey, Michael, this happened. You don't have to like that it happened. You don't have to, you know, but it happened. And until you actually get to some level of acceptance, you're not going to be able to move forward in your healing process and stuff like that. So that this whole concept, now that I can link it back to Stoicism, but it's not really Stoicism, as we just talked about, was huge for me and my recovery. So I love that you talk about it in the book.
Well, and I always, and like the chapter is called Amor Fati, but it's always followed, it's followed by another word, which is because I think it is sometimes, at least for me, I have to more times than not add not another Latin word, but it is French, the motherfucker.
Well, again, going back to the French,
very, motherfucker, it helps.
Very polite thing to say to people.
It's, but like, amor fati motherfucker, because
it's
like,
so,
it works. And I
it just has a certain je ne sais quoi to it.
Goddamn, well done. I've had people, early readers, get upset about me using the word motherfucker. In it, and then more than one later messaged me saying, okay, now I get it, where they like had a moment and they were like, now I understand why it works.
It works. There's just a little bit of like oomph to it. There's like, you know.
So to your point though, like we hit trauma, right? We something happens. Amor fati, it helps get you to that place of acceptance. And so you can start healing. It helps just, it's like permission to just get going to where you need to go. And in all things, and I'm going to sound very much like I'm downplaying trauma at this point, but I'll never forget the time when my husband and I were going to have a difficult conversation. We're going down our home gym, sit down, and on the mats, we both do jiu-jitsu. So we have jiu-jitsu mats. I'm sitting down and I feel a drop of water like hit my forehead. And unless you're in the shower in your house, you never want to have water hit your forehead. Like, you just don't. Not a good thing.
General rule of life.
Yeah.
Rules to live by. Water hitting forehead when not in shower, bad.
And so I look up and the ceiling is bubbling.
Oh.
And it's like, oh no. And like my husband like reaches up and like touches it and just like comes down. And we both looked at each other and we both at the same time said like, amor fati. And like, it was just like that. Like we didn't spend any time on the like, oh, fuck this, this sucks. Like just like what you normally do of like, oh, and it's just like amor fati. And then we moved, right? Got right into the fixing stage, right into moving forward. And it just was so nice to just like, again, get going.
Get going. Yeah, which I think there's a whole bunch of life today that just needs to get going. Now, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Did you ever go back to that conversation that you were going to have in the gym before?
No, because that's a great thing sometimes about trauma and stuff like that. Is it just like it puts things in perspective and you're like, you know what?
And you're like, oh, we don't need to talk about that.
We're good. We're good. Saved by the flood, you know?
We're moving on. We're moving on past this topic. So before we round out, I do want to talk through your model, method, system, tool, like all these different things that people on LinkedIn say. My proven tool for greater success in life, but you do have a model and a framework that I think is, you know, joking aside, it is like really valuable to help make this practical and doable.
Yeah.
So can you share a little bit about STOA?
Yes. So STOA is an acronym. Because all frameworks have to be.
Because we need more acronyms in life. We do.
I was like, what's missing in this world in those acronyms? That's what ChatGPT told me.
Yeah, corporate life needs more acronyms. That's what I say all the time when I'm talking to strangers.
Well, so STOA is where Stoicism comes from, the name STOA, and it means like painted porch. And the Stoics originally all gathered on this porch that apparently was painted. And that's where they talk the philosophy through. And so the creator of the philosophy, Zeno, you know, they were kind of trying to name it after him. And he was like, no, it's not about me. And, you know, he pushed it towards that direction, which is something I like, too, because I think a lot of religions and philosophies do end up being, you know, titled after the founder. And I think it's nice when it's not. So STOA, it made sense to try to turn that into an acronym, and I did that. So it stands for success, targets. The O is a double O, but it's just a single O in the framework. But obstacles and opportunities, and then action steps. And it's a process not just for goal setting or strategic planning, but also for debriefing. And if there's a soapbox I will gladly jump onto every single day, it's that we don't do enough debriefing in life. And the debriefing we do, be it in professional, personal life, we don't do correctly. We are too superficial about it. And so STOA is this like never-ending process. We're just constantly refining, constantly just like getting more and more precise and surgical with your approach to success, because success and goals, they're not permanent. You don't just like get to where you're going. You're like, and now I'm done. The minute you say that, like you've lost.
You're done.
You're done.
The minute you say that you're done, you're actually done. I do appreciate the circle of life, right? And so like just you get to one goal or one milestone, and the importance of just like, to your point, debriefing. I call it sort of the last mile type of stuff because I love like endurance sports metaphors.
Yeah.
And but just like, okay, what happened? What worked? What could have worked better? How do you have incremental improvements? And, you know, building into the next part, the next chapter or the next milestone. And it's this continuous process improvement, if you will, or just improvement as in terms of how we approach life, right? Because we can always be learning.
Yeah. And it's something that I always tell people I like about it is it can be done in just minutes. So this process, like my husband takes his crew through it on the way to a call. So they'll be in the fire truck, and in, you know, the 2 to 3 minutes that takes to get where they're going, you know, with everything else going on, he will take them through this process because it allows them to just focus in, and they're able to then, once they get to where they're going, get right to work. And then on the way back, you know, they run through that debrief. They do formal debriefs for bigger calls, but then he does this informal one as well. And it's also, you know, I'll take groups through it and we'll spend all day on it. So it really can kind of expand and contract as needed. You know, I'll do it before going to Costco.
Oh, really?
Oh, do I take my kids through it. My kids do it. My 9-year-old will do it now automatically before a sleepover.
I do think there's some intentionality that's required before going into Costco, because you can come back, you can come out of Costco with a lot of binge impulse buying.
Yeah. No, the debrief is pretty brutal. It's usually always, it's not a successful a debrief of like a success. It is always a debrief of failure of, yeah.
Of like failure, like who bought the 5 pounds of, you know, red licorice?
Yeah.
Right. Which may not be a bad purchase depending on your perspective, but like Costco, you can definitely come away with some things that you really scratch your head at when you get home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
No, and no shade on Costco. They're just doing a service. Like we are the ones doing the purchasing, so it's on us.
It's a fantastic company. I'm a huge, huge fan of Costco.
Yes.
In what I think that was important, though, to touch on and to end with on this idea of stoicism, and we can talk about it more maybe in a future episode, but
we can do more and more of these.
Right.
This is not the first. This isn't the first installment of Miss Becky on Whole Again.
So is the idea of success like how you define it? And I think maybe we will just dive into that next time. But I think a lot of times we make the mistake of putting success as something outside of our control. And just like you talk about like your identity, right? If we assign our identity to something outside of our control, like you're going to get in trouble because you're going to really, because you're setting yourself up for failure. And same with success. So like if you are, you know, for your injury, if you put success was you running another marathon again, well, right now, like you would be a failure.
Total.
Right? And yeah. You would have been totally chasing that. And that's the problem. So you have to understand the outcome that matters. And this is what your part of the book was so brilliant in the way you phrase it of understanding the process. We talk about process. You mentioned this the other day in one of your tips of like, you know, the digging into the process and trusting the process. And the way to trust the process is to trust that you have identified the outcome that matters. Yes. And if you do that, then you'll follow the right process. But if you are chasing the outcome that doesn't matter, not the right version of success, something outside of your control, then the process you're going to lean into is not going to be one you want to trust.
Oh, I love that. And I also love the praise back. That felt really good. Well received. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for this. And again, I do want to thank you publicly for participating in the book. I reached out to you after hearing you on a podcast and started listening to your podcast. And because I talk about Kintsugi in the book, I was like, this is too good to be true.
Too good to be true.
Yes. Yep. And I appreciate all the lessons you give us, you know, every week.
Well, thank you.
Short little snippets. They're great.
Yeah. Little snippets of wisdom that I've learned along the way, you know, from digital health to physical health to spiritual, emotional health. It all sort of gets all wrapped up into one, but I, like one of the things I appreciate talking to you and of course your book, again, Choose the Handle That Holds, where you can purchase it at all your finer book establishments, including Amazon.
Yes.
But you know, you can also buy it through your independent bookstores.
Yes, you just have to ask them to get it.
You just have to ask them. But it is the practical approach. And your sense of humor as you talk about stoicism. So I think there's a good energy to your approach that really does blow a lot of myths away that stoicism has to be all bro-y and all like stiff upper lip and without emotion and all that. So love all that. But just the really practical thing, because I don't think we have too much of an information gap out there in the world. There are plenty of books. There are a lot of podcasts, certainly. It's taking all this knowledge that I think many of us have, and some folks are still on the learning process because we all reach it at different points in our lives. But then taking it all, taking what would work for us and putting it into our formula that we can consistently do, like little steps consistently over time. And that's how we create the type of ripples that we want to create in the world. And so I love that approach that you're bringing to folks. And I will highly encourage people to go out and buy Miss Becky's book.
Thank you very much, sir. And I agree completely with you on that. And I think the ripples we start, man, is don't miss the opportunity. That's what I would leave it with. It's like, if you want more of something, call it out and seek it out. And so if wherever you're at in your stage of recovery from whatever trauma you're dealing with, recognize the power of searching and looking for what you want to see in this world, because you'll see it. And you're not going to, it doesn't mean denying the other stuff. It just means making sure you are intentionally seeing the good, because it's out there. It really is. And it's so fun to see it, to call it out, and to then emulate it. So thank you, sir.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
That works.
So I think it's a great way to end our conversation, at least our first one here. So enjoy the day.
Well, there we have it. Isn't Becky great? I hope you loved her energy and her approach to stoicism. And again, thank you for being here. And thank you for being a survivor. In this episode, we covered a lot of ground. We discovered how Stoics view emotions and how they welcome all of them. And we dove into amor fati, that mindset shift that you didn't know you needed, but now you have. How cool is that? And we discussed Becky's framework called STOA, S-T-O-A, that she shares with NFL teams, and you can use it as well to create a better ripple that you can share with the rest of the world. My hope is that you'll follow up with Becky and pick up a copy of her book, Choose the Handle That Holds, and weave in elements of Stoicism into your recovery to help you heal, grow, and become more resilient as you step into the person you're becoming. Again, thanks for listening and being a survivor. And if you wish to learn more about creating beautiful ripples and how to prevent a bad moment from turning into a bad day, please visit my website, michaelobryanshift.com, and sign up for my newsletter called The Ripple Effect. And join us each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here at Whole Again and discover how you can heal, grow, and become more resilient, and celebrate our scars as golden symbols of strength and resilience. Until then, remember, you can always come back to your breath. You've got this, and we've got you.